Exodus chapter 20, verse 13. You shall not murder. God has a law. It's a law for all people, in all places, at all times. God has a law which is the standard by which he will judge us. If you go into a courtroom and you're accused, the law is read out, and then you can know whether the accusation is true or false. Are you a lawbreaker? As we read the Ten Commandments, we ask, have you broken any of these? Are you a lawbreaker? It's God's measuring stick. He measures you and shows you what you're like. And when you're found guilty by God's law, because there is no man who is righteous and does not sin, we're all found to be guilty by God's law. Well, then there's only two places to go. To go to the fire of God's judgment. To go to eternal hell. Or to flee to Jesus Christ. To run to Christ for salvation. Which one are you going to? The sixth commandment we study today. Very simple. You shall not kill. And I got four things to say about it. First, God alone is the Lord of life. So what is really the root of this commandment? Where does this commandment come from? Why does God say to us, you shall not kill? Well, because he alone is the Lord of life. We've seen that each of these commandments has a solid foundation, has a good reason underneath it. God demands that we worship him alone because he is the one true and living God. God commands that we honour our parents, we saw last week, because God has made this world to be under authority. There is his authority, and as we come into this world, we're under the authority of our parents, and also of governments, and in the church. God has given a rule for us to live by. Each of the commandments has a solid reason. This commandment, this one, the sixth, you shall not kill, is because all life is from God. God alone is the giver of life, and he alone has the right to say when it begins and when it ends. I don't know when you were born, not all of you anyway, but did you choose that day? You said, this is where I'll come into the world. Of course, you didn't choose either your parents. You didn't say who your mother would be, who your father would be. You didn't choose the place. It was all under the authority of God. And he made the decision. And he chose that at that time, you would come into that family, in that place, and you would have that life. Now, with the animals, perhaps you own some chickens, or maybe you own a dog. But God has given us the right to choose when to end their lives. So we can kill the chicken and have it for dinner if a guest comes tomorrow. Or if it seems that one of the animals is getting diseased, we can have it killed. But with man, God has kept the right to himself alone. God made man in his own image. And we must submit to God's decisions on when we live and when we die. So again, the command is about bowing to God. It is allowing God to be God. It is about submitting to him. God has reserved to himself the decision on the day of your birth and the day of your death. When I say God is God, are you happy? Do you rejoice? Are you happy that there is none like him, that there is no other king beside him? Are you happy for God to be God? Now, the second is my second point. God looks at the heart. He said God alone is the Lord of life. And that's why he lays down this command that none will become his rival. None will decide to contend with him. But as we look at this commandment, we need to know it goes very deep. The command is about more than just killing. So suppose if one man goes out and strikes another man and kills him, Well, he says he's broken the commandment. But suppose he goes out and strikes another man. The other man falls down. He goes to hospital. He needs treatment. And at long last, he recovers. So he's not dead. He hasn't been killed. You say, ah, well, the commandment is not broken. God's law is satisfied. There's nothing that's been done which has broken God's law. Of course, you wouldn't say that, would you? We all know very quickly that God forbids fighting and he forbids hatred and he forbids all kinds of things. So this commandment just gives us a very few words, but it includes a great number of things. We can think of it this way. If you think of a tree, the roots go down under the earth, the trunk grows up, the branches grow out, then we get the leaves. When the season comes, we get the fruit. And murder is like the final fruit of the tree. After the hatred and the bitterness and the enmity have taken deep root and grown up, maybe there's been some fighting before, maybe there have been some bad words, a lot of anger, but eventually the leaves come and they're the final fruit and there's murder, someone is killed. But God tells us he hates that fruit. But of course, he wants us to understand that the whole tree is evil. The whole tree is evil before him. God made the outside and he made the inside too. God sees the things you do and he weighs them up. But God sees the things that you think inside too. He hears the secret thoughts in your mind. He judges and weighs up the desires of your heart also. Now, Jesus made this very, very clear for us in a Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5. He just told his disciples that the law would remain, that till heaven and earth passed away, nothing would disappear from this law. And then he explained just how deep the law goes. Now, he didn't change the law. No, the Old Testament itself says you will not hate your brother in your heart. The Old Testament itself says, Deuteronomy 6:4, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart. Of course, being Deuteronomy 6, it comes immediately after Deuteronomy 5. Watch Deuteronomy 5. It's the Ten Commandments given the second time. And it was said, you must obey it with your heart. But Jesus gives us a good explanation of it. Matthew chapter 5, verse 21 says, you have heard it was said to the people long ago, do not murder. And it was. And anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. And that was taught and that was true. But Jesus says, we need to go deeper. And it seems some of the teaching that the old teachers hadn't really passed on faithfully. So the Pharisees in the day of Jesus were reducing the command, making it smaller. So Jesus says, verse 22, but I tell you, anyone who is angry with his brother, and we have it in the margin there, anyone who is angry with his brother without cause, he will be subject to judgment. And again, anyone who says to his brother, Raka, which is an insult, is answerable to the Sanhedrin, the Jewish council. But anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. So don't just worry about the Jewish council. But God himself takes notice of bitter and angry words. Don't just worry about what other men will do, but know that God hears and judges and is displeased. It says, therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there you remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go, be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift. So Jesus is saying, yes, the commandment says do not kill. But don't then narrow it down. Now understand that God was explaining the fruit. And the Old Testament made it very clear that the whole tree, right down to the roots, was offensive to him. And he forbade it all. So malice or ill will, having an evil desire to someone in your heart, that is forbidden by the commandment. if in your heart you are happy to hear someone has suffered, someone you didn't like, then they are the roots of the tree. There is part of the tree. Wishing ill to one of God's creatures, one God has made in his own image, placed in his world to enjoy it and to serve and love God, and yet you wish ill to him. Well, bitterness is when we're angry with someone, but we hold on to the anger. Now, sometimes we have to be angry when we see sin, when we see God's name dishonored, when we see evil done in God's world, then we have to be angry. But bitterness is when we take it to ourselves and we hold on to it. And when that person, we cannot think of them without the heat starting to rise, without our mind starting to run faster and faster. And we start to think of what they've done, and we start to think how we don't like them for what they've done, and we hold on to it. That's bitterness. And often it shows itself in rage, when we lose control and we lose our temper, and out come angry words, out come bad words. Jesus is forbidding all of these things. And do you notice he forbids a quarrel, a disagreement, to be allowed to continue? Now, I know that in the world, sometimes it's impossible to make peace, that we try to make peace, we try to solve something, and the other person is not willing. But Jesus says we must try, and we must try all we can, until the time comes that it's clear that there can be no peace. But Jesus says, whilst there's the hope of peace, and you come to the place of worship, and you remember, oh, there's someone with something against me, Jesus says it's so serious that everything else must be left aside. God even will not receive your worship if you still have a matter where there's a brother who's got something against you, you have something against them. Doesn't matter who remembers first, but whoever remembers first, Jesus says, go and sort it out. Don't let the plant grow. Don't let those roots go down. Because God sees it all and he's displeased with it all. So is there a person and you're happy if you hear bad news about them? Now, if somebody came in this morning and said, oh, you know that one, your aunt or your neighbour or that person at work, and they've had an accident, and you think, ah, they had that coming. At last they've received what they should have received. Are you happy to hear bad news about someone? The Apostle John, 1 John chapter 3, verse 15, he said, whoever hates his brother is a murderer. Whoever hates his brother is a murderer. Is there someone, you have bitterness in your heart, you wake up in the morning, you think of that person, you go out walking, you think of that person and what they've done to you, how they hurt you. You come home in the evening and there's some gossip which they've been spreading about you and you just can't stop thinking about them. That is the sin of breaking the fifth commandment. Ephesians chapter 4 verse 26 says, do not let the sun go down on your anger. Before the sun goes down, make sure that you handed it over to God, that you confessed whatever sin there was in you. Or if you're trying and you haven't turned to bitterness, but yet the anger is still burning inside you, hand it over to God before the sun goes down. Make sure you don't keep it to yourself. God is looking at the heart. Well, that's the second point. So we've said that God alone is the Lord of life. God looks at the heart. Now third, let's just have a closer look at just exactly what this commandment does require. We've seen it requires that we're clean even in our hearts. But let's just step back a bit. Let's look over the whole territory again. God is the Lord of life. He must be honoured as the Lord of life. We must not shorten our lives or anybody else's lives in any way. We must do nothing that was not totally necessary, that will shorten somebody's life. So of course that means murder is wrong. It means suicide is wrong, because God alone must decide. There's a thing called euthanasia. Don't know if you know that word, but it's when somebody is getting towards the end of their life. They're suffering a great deal. And someone says, perhaps they say, well, let's just end it now. Let us take some poison. Let's do something just to end it now, end the suffering. No, that is taking away from God his rights as the Lord of life. At the other end of life, there is abortion. But when a baby has begun its life within its mother, now God says, protect that life. Protect the weak, protect the helpless especially. But God alone now has the right to decide when that life should end. We must not take away the rights of God, because he will watch out for his own rights. No shortening of life. But then down at the roots, there's this matter of hatred, bitterness, malice, ill will. If God's law forbids something, then it's also commanding us something. So we've spoken already about bitterness and anger. But let's move on from there. What then does it require of us? The law is summed up by saying, you must love your neighbour as yourself. That's Leviticus chapter 19. And it says in that very place, do not hate your brother in your heart, but love your neighbour as yourself. So it is actually commanding us to do good to others. When we see somebody in danger, to help them. When we see somebody being hurt, to rescue them. One of the examples in the Bible was, you see a man's donkey, you see his ox fallen down, you see his animals in danger or hurt. Well, you rescue them. Don't allow your neighbour to suffer harm, but actually protect his life. Promote his good. Do good to him. Perhaps you are with a group of others. And sorry to say this, it's often ladies. But there's some talk and it's gossip. There's another person who's not with you. But all the talk is about that person. Do you know what she's done? Do you know what she did to her husband? Do you know how she doesn't care for her child? Do you know what she did when she was at school? Do you know the immoral thing she was doing the other week? There's always talk about another person. And the talk is not to try to help them. It's not to try to build them up. It's just spoiling that person's name, spoiling that person's reputation. That's gossip. And that is against the sixth commandment. We are to protect the names of our neighbours, to protect their reputations. If there is some bad thing they have done, then go to them. If they've done some bad thing, take it to God. But why will you spread it around the community and the neighbourhood? What good will that do to them or to you? This command is broken. I'm just giving some examples here. You know, we're looking at different parts of the tree. You can think of the full thing. We could look at this for weeks. We're just giving some examples. This command is broken if we don't care for the weak. If there are needy, suffering people, if God has brought them within our orbit, within our lives, and we don't care for them. They're helpless people, they can't help themselves, and yet we walk past and we say, well, I've got my own business. And yet there's a person, their life is going down and down. And this command tells us to take care of our neighbours' lives, to promote good for them. If God has given you much, then God requires much from you. If God gives you an opportunity, then God wants you to use it. Especially in the West, in the UK, in America, in those countries, people talk about a lot about my rights. I'm going to live my life my way. I have lots of rights. Give me this, give me that. But they forget that they have responsibilities, and they think, I can get this, I can get that, and then I do with it the thing that I enjoy. My life, my way. I think I saw an advert on the road just near where we live. It was advertising the water. My life, my way. But that is denying the law of God. The law of God says, God gives you something, you use it. And on the day of judgment, God will say, what did you do, by the way? I gave you that opportunity. I gave you that resource. What did you do with it? God requires of us to promote our neighbor's good, to lift them up where we have opportunity. And then we must come to our fourth part, so the final point. Because it's clear that we need a new heart, isn't it? But how are you doing? Have you obeyed this commandment? If you stand in the courtroom of God, God reads out his law. He explains all that he demands of you according to these holy words. How have you done? Have you hated gossip? Have you stopped it whenever you've heard it? Have you stopped thinking so much of yourself and tried to lift your neighbor up? Have you hated bitter and angry words? Has anger been killed from your heart before the sun goes down every day? Do you love your enemies? Do you help the orphans and the widows? Does that come to you as easily as it should? Because those things, we know we should do them, don't we? What a good place the world would be if everybody did those things. We'd hardly have the needy and the helpless with us if everyone had given themselves to serving their neighbour when they had need. But we know what comes out of our hearts so easily is selfishness, isn't it? And anger and bitterness. They come so naturally to us, and it's so hard, even if we've become Christians, so hard to chase them away. In 2007 and then 2008, after the election, the violence seemed to come so easily. And it was like a fire that it just spread and spread and spread. But how to put it out and how to get rid of these problems? But there is a man who had and who has this heart. There is one. When his enemies put him to death, there were no bitter words. There was no shaking of the fist, no promise of revenge. But he prayed to his father. He took it to God and he said, Father, forgive them, because they do not know what they are doing. As they murdered him, he prayed and desired that they might have life. James and John, two of his disciples, one day they're passing by a village, and that village would not receive them. They chased them away because they were traveling to the wrong place, and those two places weren't friendly, and they chased them away, and they didn't want to receive the word of God in that village because of where they were going. And James and John said to Jesus, Lord, shall we call down fire from heaven to destroy these people? Jesus said, no, you don't know what you're saying. I haven't come to destroy men's lives. I've come to save them. See, we're guilty. And God could take away our lives. And that's his right. Our lives are forfeited. We don't deserve them because we're sinners against God. But God sent his son, that whoever believes in him would not perish, but have everlasting life. God sent his son not to judge us, which we deserve, but his son gave up his own life. Jesus was innocent and sinless, and he went to the cross of Calvary, and he was killed so that we could be raised up, so that we could receive a new heart, receive a new life. Because whoever believes in the living Jesus, Jesus himself makes them new. He forgives all their sins. So the broken law can be forgotten, And he gives a new spirit so that we can live for him. And in the world which is to come, he'll completely remove all sin from us forever. We'll be forgiven all our sin now, but he'll make it even impossible for us to sin. He gives us a new heart now, and in the future he'll take away completely all the remains of everything that is old. And we'll live in a new world of love, a new world of purity. Have you received that new heart? Have you changed? When you see bad things coming out, are you now sad? Do you grieve and mourn before God when you know you've been in gossip? And what good did it do? You know, you've been in some fight, but actually, even if you're a murderer, and even if you've killed, you killed a baby in a womb. Maybe you killed someone in secret and we don't even know about it, and God does, and you can't forget it. But Jesus' death deals even with that. Jesus makes you new even from that. The sixth commandment finds us guilty. Does that leave you heading to hell? Or does that leave you running to Jesus for mercy? Only God can take lives. We owe him our lives now because of sin. But God offers us a new life, because Jesus gave his life on the cross. That's his offer to you. So please take it today and enjoy it forever.